Patent and Trademark Office has an 18-month recovery plan to deal with last year's sequestration cuts. PTO offers a look inside the real impact of the automatic budget cuts. In his weekly, biweekly feature Inside the Reporter's Notebook, Federal News Radio executive editor Jason Miller details how sequestration took a huge bite out of one of PTO's top technology priorities. And I confess, when you told me this was the math problem we were going to discuss, 6 equals 18, I didn't get it at first. I do now, but explain it in its entirety, my friend.
Sure. So PTO, which actually is a very interesting case study around sequestration, because 99% of their funding comes from user fees. So when they're told, hey, you know, 6 months from now, you got to cut $148 million from your budget, they're left going, okay, what do we do? So they had 6 months to cut all that money. And what Tony Scardano, who is the CFO at the PTO, says now that it's going to take them 18 months to recover from that huge cut. And the reason why it's such a huge cut is because where did they find the money? Well, they said, and the powers that run PTO said, we're not going to cut anything that makes this money, because that's our, you know, they're in some ways a profitable, you know, for-profit company. I know that's a dirty word in government, but so they're not going to, for instance, reduce overtime hours of their patent examiners and trademark examiners, because that brings in money. So when they look to cut money, the biggest place to cut money was technology, and what they ended up doing was cutting about $80 million from their technology budget. And that in itself was a huge cut. Now, they also froze training and froze hiring, stopped training, and you stopped travel, but that's little. I mean, that's really little stuff in the scheme of things. It's that technology cut that was huge. And let me just put one big finer point on this. They have one of their major programs is the end-to-end patent program. If you remember, this was called out by President Barack Obama in his 2011 State of the Union address as one of those programs that's going to move the government into the 21st century. Well, they had to basically let go of 500 vendor employees overall, and 300 of them came from this end-to-end patent program. And right, they were down to about 10 contractors supporting that program during sequestration. And then during that period, 4 of those 10 left for other jobs. So they were in tough position. I don't want to say dire straits, because they have good people at PTO who do good work. The CIO, John Owens, is a smart guy. He figured it out. But they were bare bones.
The problem there, though, I wonder if that's common to what we saw about sequestration. Part of the reason this is significant is because this is insight that we've really gotten rarely across the government about what happened and what the nuts and bolts things were that agencies really had to do to make the numbers.
Right. And I think one of the things why, so PTO is I think twofold. One, because they're a user fee based on user fees, that's how they get their funding, they're in a tough position. A lot of agencies who get appropriations, they could cut from anywhere. They could, you know, that's why there was furloughs. Well, PTO didn't want to do furloughs because that meant revenue. You know, PTO, for instance, has a limited back office, you know, functionality, so that's where everything came from. Other agencies could say, well, we're going to, you know, shut down our building, or we're going to, you know, reduce travel. And so PTO in some ways is in itself an interesting case study. But I think what it shows is that agencies, when you make cuts like they did to major programs and projects, IT or otherwise, the recovery time is not start up, let's go, turn the engine back on. There is a process, and that process is much longer than the initial cuts. And I went up to Tony after he spoke at the Government Performance Summit earlier this week and said, 18 months? He goes, yeah. Some of the vendors that we had on the project left for other projects, so we had to rehire them. And then when you bring in new vendors, there's a learning curve that they have to get up to speed. He said, you know, other times we had to issue a whole new contract. So when you issue whole new contracts, well, that takes time as well. And I think that's what's emblematic across the government. Every agency faced that. If it's a stop work order, you still have stuff to make up. And if it's an ending of a contract, you got to rebid the contract if you decide you still need those services.
You have more on the PTO situation inside the Reporter's Notebook on federalnewsradio.com later this afternoon. You're also writing about the latest cybersecurity report from the Office of Management and Budget and an interesting anniversary coming up.
Exactly. August 2004. Where were you, Francis Rose?
Let me think. August of 2004, I can't say on the radio.
Yeah, me neither. But most people were probably at their office and had a normal day. But that day, President Bush signed HSPD 12, Homeland Security Presidential Directive 12, issued a policy guidance at the time nobody really thought of as a seminal moment in federal IT history. You're like, remember this week in baseball? I don't think we'll ever
yes.
do this week in federal IT history.
TWIB.
And if we do, I don't think it's going to say this, but over the years, the Smart Identity Program, in my opinion, obviously, has come to resemble really all that's both good and bad in government. Let me tell you why it's good. HSPD 12 was very much ahead of its time. At the time, OMB recognized both the threats to agency networks and potential physical security benefits of having a single standardized identity card that uses, at that time, cutting-edge technology. Now the bad. A decade after the issuance of HSPD 12, only 67% of the agencies have deployed just the logical access piece
Yikes.
To secure their computer networks. Now this is not just disappointing. I'll even call this a borderline dereliction of duties, given the fact that the Defense Department has proved that smart identity cards usage reduces cyber risks and attacks by more than 50%. Now we're at the time when cybersecurity is all over the news. We hear about new attacks every day. And this is something, and I'm not going to say it's simple because it's not, but this is something that they've had a decade to do to protect themselves. And unfortunately, the results are disappointing to say the least.
You know, the cool thing is if we did do this week in federal IT, we could cut the acronym for it would be TWIFIT.
TWIFIT.
Yeah, like they had TWIB for this week in baseball.
Maybe should I add it to my reporter's notebook and you can voice Vin Scully?
It was Mel Allen did this week in baseball from the baseball nerd trivia department
there
this
you
afternoon.
Go.
this week, Capitol Hill's been looking a lot at cyber appropriations. Does this report help or hurt the effort to get the money that agencies need to do cyber right?
You know, I think a little I'll play the 50-50 rule here. On one hand, it shows that, yes, there is progress. Agencies are going in the right direction. But on the other hand, Congress is going to go, it's been a decade, at least on HSPD 12. Why should we continue to pay for this when obviously agencies aren't moving very quickly on it? On the other hand, they are moving quickly on the Trusted Internet Connection Initiative. They are moving on the Continuous Diagnostics and Mitigation, CDM, programs. And I think that's where you'll see a lot of positive feedback from the Capitol Hill. Phyllis Schneck from the Undersecretary over at DHS testified twice over the last week and a half before House and Senate Appropriations Committees and talked about the cybersecurity budget and made the case for more money, especially around things like Einstein 3A, which is, you know, Einstein 3 Accelerated, which is the intrusion detection and prevention, as well as continuous diagnostics and mitigation, more money, more focus on those areas. So I think this report, it depends if anyone reads it on Capitol Hill, which, you know, besides me and a few others, I'm not sure who actually reads it in the whole world, but I think this can only give them some hope that there things are getting better.
Maybe we should encourage somebody to just throw something in there that's a shout out to you. To see if anybody else notices.
This week in Jason Miller policy wonkness.
Now we're getting really far afield. I love going inside the reporter's notebook. You've got it up on federalnewsradio.com. It's great to have you on, my friend. Thanks.
Thank you. We'll do more Monday with Tom and Emily on the Federal Drive.